Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, December 10th, 2019. Riek Machar is back in Juba.
All the party agree that they should go for 23 states plus one state. But the government is seat, they are going up more than 51 states. This is Richard to deadlock about the outstanding issues. Without handling the issues of number of states and the boundaries, SPLM-IO will not be part of any government.
And South Sudan's Assembly Speaker resigns under pressure.
I am not after position or political power. My intention is the reason for tendering my resignation is an act of deep and sincere respect to your leadership.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Department of Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control sanctioned five South Sudanese nationals today for their role in the kidnapping and disappearance of Dong Samuel Luoc, a South Sudanese human rights lawyer, and Agri Idri, a member of the SPLM-IO. The men disappeared from Nairobi, Kenya on January 23rd and 24th, 2017, respectively, according to a UN panel of experts report. The Treasury Department sanctioned Aboud Stephen Thiankol, the commander of the detention facilities where Agri and Dong were held prior to their killings. The U.S. also sanctioned Malwal Dal Marwell, identified as being the commander of forces who detained and assaulted three international monitors in December 2018. Michael Kwajeng is one of two people publicly identified as being present in Kenya during and in having a hand in the kidnapping of Dong and Agri Idri. And John Top Lum is identified as being the person responsible for or being complicit in serious human rights abuses. He is also one of two people publicly identified as having a hand in the kidnapping of Dong and Agri. Lum is reported to have called a member of Dong's family in order to provide information on Dong's whereabouts in return for a substantial cash payment. South Sudan in Focus will bring you updates on this developing story. SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar arrived in Juba today to hold more talks with President Salva Kiir. The SPLM-IO deputy spokesman says the two will try to break the deadlock over the number of states and their boundaries. He says unless the parties resolve the dispute over the number of states, the SPLM-IO will not participate in a transitional government. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Machar arrived in Juba in the same plane as Sudan's Sovereign Council member Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known as Hemeti. SPLM-IO Deputy Spokesman Manawa Peter Gatkot says Machar will consult with IO officials and members of other political parties in Juba today to ascertain their thoughts on South Sudan's number of states and their boundaries.
Last week, the meeting between the parties and the government didn't break deadlock about the outstanding issues. Today, he will come and consult the members of Political Bureau and National Liberation Council of the SPLM, SPLA-IO. Also, he will have meetings with other political party who was part to the agreement. And he will have a meeting, especially with President Salva Kiir, to discuss about the outstanding issues.
Last week's meeting in Juba, mediated by South Africa and regional bloc IGAD, ended in a deadlock. But Gatkos says the SPLM-IO and other parties were willing to compromise on the number of states.
All the parties agree that they should go for 23 states plus one state. But the government is seat, they are going up more than 51 states. This is Richard to deadlock about the outstanding issues. Without handling the issues of number of states and the boundaries, SPLM-IO will not be part of any government.
Gatkot says Machar is expected to meet with President Kiir tomorrow to pave the way for another meeting is scheduled for next week between the leaders of the various political parties. Speaking in Arabic, Tut Keo Gatluak, President Kiir's security advisor and chairman of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, the body overseeing implementation of the peace deal, says the Kiir Machar meeting is important.
In this delegation, we also welcome Dr. Riek Machar, who is also coming to Juba. As you all know, we have got a file for the peace agreement on South Sudan, and as we come to the end, the two visits are all aimed at having sustainable peace.
The parties to last year's peace agreement agreed to form a unity government by February after agreeing to two extensions on the transitional period. Machar is expected to spend 4 days in Juba, during which time he will also meet with civil society activists and women's groups. The parties agreed during a tripartite meeting in Kampala to delay the formation of the transitional government for another 100 days to allow for the cantonment and training of various security forces into one unified army. Opposition military leaders have said their forces have turned up at cantonment sites, but there was not enough food or medical supplies for the forces. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Speaker of South Sudan's Transitional Legislative Assembly resigned, bowing to pressure from fellow lawmakers. Anthony Lino Makana was accused of failing to present Auditor General reports on corruption and mismanagement, and of approving a $400 million loan without running it by Parliament first. One Juba analyst says Makana should have left much earlier. Lasuba Memo has the story for VOA from Juba.
Makana says he resigned following a consultative meeting between SPLM lawmakers and senior ruling party officials at the SPLM House in Juba.
I am not after position or political power. My intention is the reason for tendering my resignation is an act of deep and sincere respect to your leadership, for you requested me to do so through the emissaries that you sent to me.
Makana stepped down weeks after MPs threatened to pass a vote of no confidence against him over corruption allegations and blocking the August House from conducting its oversight role over the executive. MP Darwai Mabor says Makana prevented summons of various ministers to answer questions of accountability, intimidated MPs who questioned the 2019-2020 budget, failed to table reports of the Auditor General, and approve a $400 million government loan from the Africa Import and Export Bank without first bringing it to the House.
What is in place is that the leaders have to be accountable. We as parliamentarians, we don't have problem with the person individually. We have a problem with the administration. So Makana has not managed to actually perform his duties. That's why we force him, we pressure him to take that action. It is not bad to resign.
Juba-based political analyst James Okuk says Makana's performance was insignificant. He says despite a lack of commitment by the government to pay civil servants' salaries and fund a revitalized peace deal, Makana kept quiet about those issues. Okuk also says Makana dragged his feet on the parliament's renovation, which probably angered lawmakers.
The renovation of the parliament, which would have been done very quickly, was messy and actually it didn't do something attractive in the parliament than people thought that renovation will do.
Although Makana resigned, he said he would fight any attempts to impugn his character.
I am ready to launch a legal case before a court of law, if need be, against anyone for character assassination.
Okuk says this is not possible since the move by the lawmakers to issue a vote of no confidence against him was a collective position of the August House. Okuk says Makana's strengths were his ability to connect with the country's top leadership and communicate easily in English and Arabic. Makana, who hails from former Western Equatorial State, was appointed Speaker of Parliament as part of the 2015 peace agreement. MP Mabor says the next speaker, who has yet to be named, should learn a lesson from Makana's mistakes.
Even president should understand that parliament is going to do its work. Now we are going to see who will be the next speaker. Makana is a good example. Even if you make mistakes after 72 hours to the end of the pre-transitional period, we will still have a problem with you.
Apparently, three MPs, Betty Ochanogwaro, Martin Okeruk, and David Nailomayo, have been nominated by the Equatorial SPLM Caucus to succeed Makana, according to Johanna Bonju, spokesperson of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly. President Alpha Kiir is expected to appoint one of those nominees, Speaker, very soon. For VOA News, I'm Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Three civilians were killed by suspected Misriya Arab nomads in the disputed Abyei region on Sunday, according to the area's chief administrator, who condemns the attack. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Kola Lord, chief administrator of Abyei area, says 2 days ago the attackers stormed the Ngok Dinka area of Low, some 19 kilometers east of Abyei. Lord says suspected Misriya armed nomads killed three innocent civilians, then turned around and left without a trace.
The attack actually claimed the lives of three people. They were all men. Three others were missing. But yesterday, the missing people were found.
Alor says the missing were later found alive and unharmed. Alor says he believes the Amasiria's nomads wanted to drive the Ngok Dinka communities away from their homes. Alor says the security of the Abyei administrative area is solemnly the responsibility of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, or UNESFA. He says many lives have been lost to the suspected Arab Misriya. He is calling on UNESFA to carry out their stated mandate to provide security in the area.
The UN Interim Security Force for Abyei have been mandated to protect the civilians in the area. That is why they are there. So I'm urging them to do their best in order to apprehend such an element who have been killing the innocent people.
Several attacks have been reported involving the Ngok Dinka and the suspected Misriya Arab in various villages in the past years. Last month, Arab men who local suspects were Misriya killed 9 people and wounded 4 others in 2 villages of Nyadol and Dumngok. In October, officials say 1 person was killed and 4 others were wounded during a road ambush in Wokir village in Abyei. Alor says things are relatively calm today as people have resumed their day-to-day lives following Sunday's attack. South Sudan in Focus was unable to independently verify the alleged attack. Attempts to reach UNESCO spokesperson Daniel Adikera for comment were unsuccessful as his phone's numbers were switched off and he did not respond to emails. The oil-rich Abyei region has been disputed by Sudan and South Sudan for years. On June 27, 2011, the United Nations Security Council authorized the deployment of a peacekeeping force in the area, known as the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, in response to the renewed violence, escalating tension, and population displacement in the region. Since then, UNESFA mandate has been renewed several times. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Tune to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, drones, the new weapon of choice in fighting a disease prevalent in Africa. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes your country unique?
The people are lovely and they receive strangers into their country when they come, and they show them love too. And I think our culture too, yeah, the food and other things.
The food, the culture, the people, the diversity in culture makes us unique.
The character of the people. They are very friendly, and even if you do something bad to them, there is a way they talk to you in order not to hurt you.
Basically, the beautiful scenery, because we have vast pieces of animals, wildlife, we have rivers and lakes, have hospitable people around.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
Thank you.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. And today we're talking about malaria. Drones are being used as a new weapon in the fight against malaria on the island of Zanzibar. In the village of Cheju in particular, drones are spraying a silicone-based liquid on large stretches of stagnant water in rice paddies where malaria-carrying mosquitoes laid their eggs. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on how the country is using the new method to combat the disease.
Drones like this are spraying a silicone solution across standing water, forming a thin layer that will eventually prevent mosquito eggs from hatching. Dr. Bart Knowles is a medical entomologist and the lead researcher working with the Zanzibar Malaria Elimination Program. He says this method will significantly reduce the number of the malaria-carrying mosquitoes in the area.
This will last for around 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. And after that, the biological control agent, the film, will break down by itself. And then you apply, after a month, you apply a new film on the water surface and you have more control of mosquitoes.
Without the gel, the larvae would have become adult mosquitoes in search of a blood meal. When those mosquitoes bite humans infected with malaria, they become vectors for the disease and continue the deadly transmission cycle. Along the Indian Ocean coast of East Africa, Zanzibar and mainly Tanzania have had a long battle with malaria. Using drones is the best way to tackle the problem, says Abdullah Ali from the Zanzibar Malaria Elimination Program.
With manual kind of intervention, then you'd not be able to cover the wider area. But this one is going to be different.
Officials say drone spraying is a relatively inexpensive way to stop the mosquitoes from reproducing. Guido Welter is with the Drone for Malaria project.
A drone can fly with the speed we adjust. 1 hectare within 10 liters would be 3 minutes. We calculated that within 1 hour we can spray 8 hectares.
That's equivalent to the size of 8 rugby fields. The product program manager for DJI Agros drones, Eduardo Rodriguez, say while the drones can operate in manual mode, they can also do the job automatically.
We can also fly into a fully autonomous fly mode where the pilot, knowing the GPS coordinates and knowing the area that needs to be sprayed, can select that area, can input a few flying and spraying parameters, and literally press 2 buttons.
According to the World Health Organization, Aquitaine AMF, the product being sprayed, is safe and effective when used according to the directions on the labels. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Sudanese female journalists want media institutions in Sudan to enact rules that protect female journalists as they go about their work. Some female journalists say security organizations try to intimidate and harass them. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Khartoum.
Female journalists here say security organs have used intimidation tactics on them much more than they do on male journalists to suppress their work. Today, as the world marks the Human Rights Day, female journalists use the occasion to advocate for their rights. Sophia Sadiq, a freelance journalist and a member of the Sudanese Female Journalist Network, says she has experienced a lot of intimidation and harassment due to the nature of her work, and not just from security forces. Speaking in Arabic, Sadiq says Sudanese female journalists are vulnerable to many rights violations in a field dominated by men.
Some of us face challenges when we go for marriages or maternity leave. When we come back, we find it difficult to get the same opportunity and privileges of work. There are also problems in our rights, even within the labor law of the country.
Sadiq says female journalists would like the transitional government in Sudan to reform existing laws or enact legislation that protects the rights of women so they are able to work in a conducive environment. Mashair Ramadan works as an investigative reporter in Al Ayam Arabic Daily newspaper in Khartoum. Speaking in Arabic, Ramadan says working as an investigative reporter in a Sudanese society is not easy because many Sudanese have negative attitudes towards female journalists, something she says need to change.
Society look at Sudanese female journalists with aggression and disrespect. They regard us as women, but not professionals. Families do ask a lot of questions about the nature of our work. Sometimes, when we delay out in an event or an interview, some of us face a lot of threat within our own homes.
Ramadan says female journalists use the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence to advocate for their rights and sensitize communities on the roles of female journalists in the society, such as organizing public forums and radio talk shows on the role of female journalists. Sudanese journalist Malaz Assam, who worked previously for Al Sahafa Daily newspaper, says promotion and capacity building are reserved for male journalists only, making it difficult for women to access opportunities. Speaking in Arabic, Assam says the time has come for Sudanese women to be treated equally in the workplace.
Now, we have a good number of female journalists who are reporters and editors, but we do not see any of them being promoted to head departments or being appointed as chief editors. We only serve in low level of profession because we don't get training opportunities.
Last week, the Sudanese Journalist Network petitioned officials at the Information Ministry to demand that the government reform the media sector and fire all elements in the media institutions allied with the former president Omar al-Bashir. Rashid Said Yaqub, the first undersecretary at the Sudan's Information Ministry, promised to work jointly with the Sudanese media institutions to draft laws that guarantee freedom of speech and protection of all journalists in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed received the Nobel Peace Prize on Tuesday, mainly for the peace deal he reached with Eritrea last year. Many observers hoped the deal would spark political reforms in Eritrea, where President Isaias Afwerki has ruled with a heavy hand for years. But as Marta Vanderwolf reports from London, analysts and activists are increasingly skeptical the deal will stop Eritrea's government from oppressing its own citizens.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was in Oslo Tuesday to accept the 2019 Nobel Peace Prize.
I accept this award on behalf of Ethiopians and Eritreans. Likewise, I accept this award on behalf of my partner and comrade in peace, President Isaias Afwerki, whose goodwill, trust and commitment were vital in ending the two-decade deadlock between our countries.
After 1998 to 2000 war that killed some 70,000 people, Eritrea and Ethiopia were stuck in a stalemate, unable to agree upon their border. When Abiy came to power in 2018, he quickly negotiated and signed a peace deal with Eritrea to strong international acclaim. Political analyst Goitom Gabriel says while there are some positive developments, there are two critical shortcomings when it comes to the results of the peace deal.
Firstly, it was expected by the international community and the Eritrean population at large, I believe, that it would initiate a process of political reform inside Eritrea, which it has failed to do. Secondly, the border between Ethiopia and Eritrea remains undemarcated, and the peace process for this reason remains incomplete. We can therefore say that rather than a transition from war to peace, what we have seen is a transition from one form of no war, no peace stalemate into another form of no war, no peace stalemate.
Human rights groups often criticize Eritrea's suppression of the media and political dissent, among other human rights abuses. The border conflict between the neighboring countries was used as a justification for Eritrean policies to enforce indefinite military service. Activist Vanessa Tsahai is associated with the Eritrean diaspora movement YIKAL, meaning enough. She is disappointed that more than a year after the peace deal, the situation for ordinary people in Eritrea hasn't changed.
The only impact that this peace deal has had on Eritrea has been for the Eritrean leadership. So both financially, in terms of the opening up of business between the two countries, but also diplomatically, where Eritrea has now started being seen as this country that is in transition towards better days without any proof of development or any indication that this is actually going to happen.
Ethiopia is scheduled to hold national elections in May, the first since the previous government was ousted in 2018 after years of protest. Whether or not Abiy wins a majority, there's little indication the situation in Eritrea is about to change. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, London.
And here's a look at today's headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. The U.S. Treasury Department Foreign Assets Control Office sanctioned five South Sudanese nationals today, most of them for their role in the kidnapping and disappearance of human rights lawyer Dong Samuel Luwak and SPLM-IO member Agri Idri. Both men disappeared from Nairobi, Kenya in January of last year. Among the five, the Treasury Department sanctioned Abud Stephen Thiangkol, who ran the detention facilities where Agri and Dong were held before they were killed. Also sanctioned was Malual Dal Murwell, commander of the forces who detained and assaulted three international monitors in December of 2018. Opposition leader Riek Machar is back in Juba. He's scheduled to meet once again with President Salva Kiir to try to hammer out a compromise on the number of states and their boundaries, a major sticking point in previous negotiations in South Sudan. Last week's talks in Juba between the parties to the peace deal did not resolve that issue. And finally, three civilians were killed by suspected Misriya Arab nomads in the disputed Abyei region on Sunday, that according to the area's chief administrator, who condemned the attack. Kual Alor, the chief administrator, says suspected Misriya attackers stormed the Ngok Dinka area of Lua, some 19 kilometers east of Abyei. Alor says the missing were later found alive and unharmed. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol, and that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Exodus by Bob Marley. Been listening to the legendary Bob Marley with the song Exodus. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. We appreciate you making us a part of your evening. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.